there's no better feeling than a personal win. And the State Farm Personal Price Plan can help you do just that. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
Dublab. Hello everyone, this is your host Ale Cohen here on Dublab Radio. Today we have a very special guest, someone I've followed for many years. His name is Ian Browdy, behind projects such as The Lightning Seeds, Care, and many, many others, including Big in Japan. Also had a hand on so many other works, including bands like Echo and the Bunnymen, dozens, you know, The 3 O'Clock here in Los Angeles, and dozens of other artists, too many to mention here. But Ian Browdy joined me in conversation from London, where he just put out a new record under The Lightning Seeds, a band known for its beautiful songwriting, beautiful pop songs, very lush production. And today Ian is going to be talking to me about his new album, See You in the Stars, that just came out. We visit some of his previous works. We talk about his current album and also his overall take on music. Thank you, Ian, for joining me. And for those out there, enjoy this conversation on Dublab Radio. Hello, Ian.
Hello.
How are you doing today?
I'm okay, actually. I'm in Portobello Road, actually, in London. And we've been having a heat wave here, so it's been very, very hot.
I heard about that.
It broke, and now it's just normal. It's good. It's good, really. It's back to sort of, you know, just hot.
Yeah. It doesn't feel like LA now anymore.
No, well, it didn't. Yeah, it's different. I don't mind being hot in LA. You're meant to be hot in LA.
Exactly.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
You're not meant to be hot in London. It's meant to be raining or something, you know.
Exactly. No, I was so excited when I saw the news of a new album by The Lightning Seeds. Obviously, I follow your work over the years, not only as a songwriter, as a quote unquote producer, which I say quote unquote because I know that the word producer is a very loaded word for someone that.
Well, I'm a very reluctant producer. I haven't produced anything for a long time. You know, I try and avoid it wherever I can, and I've managed to avoid it for a lot of years.
And yes, absolutely. And I think what I appreciate of that, I think with that for. If I am correct in my assessing, is that it's not just a matter of not wanting to assume that role, but it's more of almost a philosophy, right? That is more about collaboration. It's about more working with people than you know, directing.
Well, it took me a long time to realize. So the first band that I ever kind of, I suppose, produced was Echo and the Bunnymen. And they were my friends, and So there were no barriers. So I used to play guitar and I'd write some of the middle eights and I'd do what I was just in the band while we were recording. So my idea of production was that really, you know, it's like I was in the band, you know, for that period doing whatever needed to be done. And then later I realized, well, actually that's not what production is. And I learned, you know, so when I was doing something like The Coral many years later, it was a very different thing, even though I put a lot of my heart and soul into that band as well. But, you know, and then I thought, actually, I don't mind when I can just do you just get together to make a great record, and that's a collaboration. So I'll only work in a collaborative way now.
Yes.
If I do decide to produce things, it won't be production. It might be called production, but it'll be a collaborative thing. And if I feel like writing or playing guitar, I not want to have one hand tied behind my back.
Exactly. Not having to obey by the restrictions of who is the producer, who is the songwriter.
More like a hip-hop way of producing, where you make the record, you know.
Exactly. With this new record, See You in the Stars, I hear a progression. I hear a new sound, but also the the Ian Browdy identity is heavily in there as well. You know, it's obvious. You know, it's your work.
I can't
you know?
Get away from me. However,
exactly. We're all stuck. We're all stuck with ourselves. You know, in a way. But I was very pleasantly surprised how refreshing it is. Feels very personal. Feels like it's a love letter to loved ones in a way. That's how
that
it feels
would be
like.
True. I think that would be true. It's quite a personal record. They all are really pure, Life of Riley. But I think it's when I was recording it, I came to a sort of a moment. I've got to stop looking at the camera. I came to a moment and I kind of felt like, say, a song like Sunshine really reminded me of what I used to do. Say in the 80s, quite it had that feel into it. And I thought, I'm going to go with that. And then I found like a lot of the songs were almost like a greatest hits of me, but written by me. So then I was doing a track called Green Eyes, and I felt like lyrically it was like a postscript to Pure.
Yes.
And then harmonically it felt, so then I decided to shadow the little trumpet things and take little pieces of what might remind you of Pure. So behind, there's a lot of that going on in that track. And all the tracks in certain, probably more subtle ways, so probably I'm the only one who would totally get that. But it is, it's kind of like a postcard to myself, really, from all these different places.
Yes. Well, you mention that feeling from the 80s that you mentioned. What is that feeling? I'm interested in hearing because you've been there's something very much about you and your sound that you hear over and over, even in bands like Care, that there's that almost baroque type of sense of melody that you have, but also a lushness. But it's not the lushness that comes from proficiency, but the lushness that comes from coming from punk in a way, right? It's well, almost like you built it after they swept the floor.
Yeah, I think I'm a funny mix of that kind of thing. So I really want everything to be melodic, and I feel like I want everything to feel positive, even though it might be sad. It's positive. It's not sad, miserable. It's sad, positive, you know. And I think maybe all my aesthetic, my life in a way, and music, but also life, I think is those years where punk was happening and where it was the less, I've said this in interviews before, but the lesson that I've learned at that time, the first Ramones album made me throw away all the records I had and start again. And it was a gateway into New York and Patti Smith, television, Talking Heads. You know, I was more influenced by that than I was the Sex Pistols and the English stuff, which I liked, and I saw the Sex, you know, and it was good. But there was something about when I was in my first band, which was more of a performance art thing than punk, really. But, and I loved the Velvets with Andy Warhol. And I think the thing that really came to me then was I was someone who'd sat in my room and played guitar and stuff like that. But I felt like, I have said this in interviews before, and I'll say it again because it's just true. So I just came to the realization that if you have an idea and it's a good idea, even if you can't do it very well, it's always a good idea. And however well you do it or don't do it, it will never stop being a good idea. But if you don't have an idea, however good you are and however well you do something that isn't a good idea, it will never become a good idea. So I'm always focused on an idea that I can, if I write a song, I'll sing a melody into my phone, but then I'll talk to myself and say the idea and say what I'm kind of, you know, I'll try and explain it to myself. And I feel like the word pop's been used around us a lot, And it's a strange word because it means something horrible and something good. So, and it, the meaning of pop changes over the years. I hated when I had the tag of perfect pop. Made me want to be sick, really. I, you know, it's like I would, the fact, it, there's a real difference between searching for perfection and the pursuit of excellence. And I would never search for perfection, but I am always trying to push a boundary and get it better. So, and even though that sounds a subtlety, it's a universe of difference, you know. So I would say that. And I would say that the way, like, pop art is like a moment captured in an explosive way that you then put on the wall. That's how I want my songs to be, really. That's kind of what I've always wanted out of it. And I've never succeeded, really, in capturing the moment properly, which is why you do another one, you know, which is perfect. It's, that's why you do something else.
Exactly.
And it's, and I did with, I think the way I've sung on this album, it's funny because you, what you said is right. It's like different, but the same, or the same, but different, which is kind of what you want really, I suppose. But it's like, I feel like listening to it now that I've given it a bit of space, it's not innocent because, you know, because obviously I'm at a different part of my career and I'm in my 60s, but I feel like it's there's no barriers being put. I'm talking quite directly. And I think, you know, I think a lot of, I love Buddy Holly, and a lot of that seems to have come out in the way I'm singing. I think it's kind of, sorry about that. It's kind of coming out in a little bit of a, I don't know. I feel like it's kind of wide-eyed, and I'm trying to talk directly and not let things get in the way.
Yeah,
you know, maybe.
In a way, if I have to speak as a you know, I know that your son plays in part of the Lightning Seeds, and as a parent, I have kids that are a bit younger. Mine, I have teenagers, there's something I think that maybe a return to another age, a younger age, now that some of the things of adulthood had lifted, right? As sometimes even financial responsibilities or things you have to carry to, you know, make ends meet, and that maybe you're in a place in your life, if for what I gather, that you're like, I don't need to do those things. I'm only doing my thing just for the pure sense of accomplishing what I want to express.
Well, I'm a worrier and I'm an overthinker, so I'm never quite free of that stress.
Of course.
But you are right. You know, maybe, you know, sometimes I'm sure you're the same with your children. Sometimes you want to play them some music, and when they get it, you hear it for as a new thing because they're enjoying it, and you almost... it gives you a new love of something. And I think maybe with Riley being involved, there is an element of that. I want him to experience playing in front of thousands of people, and I want him to, you know, and it's almost like, look, this is... So in a way, that maybe has reawakened my quality control of myself in a way.
Yes.
And made me care and want to. I feel like I kind of got distracted, not distracted by musically, but... I feel like I've let myself drift down the divisions, and now about 3 or 4 years ago, I decided, no, I want to be excellent. I want to be excellent. I want to have an excellent band, or, you know, and I'm trying to push back to the Premier League.
Yes, yes.
And if I make it, great. And if I don't, it's worth the effort is the thing to enjoy, really. When you're young, you sort of, you write songs and you get wind in your sails of your career, and people in record companies and people who fans, and everyone puts an energy into you, and you sort of are pushed up by that. You're buoyed by that, really. And it brings the best out of you. You kind of, it's inspiring, and you want to be the best, and you live and breathe it, you know. And then later on, that is, you know, that's difficult to feel like that way again. So I think you have to, it might be a bit cryptic, but I think you have to, I feel like I'm a little kid and I have a burning ambition, but I also don't want to fight a war that I won 20 years ago. Yeah. I don't want to refight it, you know.
Yeah.
So, in a way, I feel much more in control of setting my own parameters. I think when you're young, you're buying a lottery ticket and you're hoping you're the Beatles. And you're probably not. And now I know I'm not the Beatles. So it's a different situation.
There's someone here in LA that thinks you are, but that's the difference. That's a separate story.
But you know what I mean? You kind of know who you are, and you know you're not like going in, putting a chip on the roulette wheel. You're kind of going, no, I'm happy to be me.
Yeah.
And let's see where me can go.
Yes. Well, there's an element of pop music in it's a loaded term, right? When we say pop music, but there's an element of rock or pop music that is almost a young man's sport in a way, right? And how do we carry that as we move on our careers? And you know, you said you're 60, and you know,
63.
And that, how do you, you know, you're like, what am I doing this guitar thing and thinking I'm the Beatles, you know, after I'm, you know.
You know, no, I don't feel like that. I feel like no one says, I think just after the Lightning Seeds a long time ago, I felt like, you know, should I stop that, you know? And then I felt like no one says to Picasso, mate, you've been painting for years, stop it, you know, or, you know, any other art form. I'm not saying I'm Picasso, obviously, but any kind of a portrait artist, or, you know, you don't say, or a Peter Blake, you know, you don't, no one says you should stop that now.
Yeah.
And I think musicians get a hard time compared to an actor, compared to an artist, compared to a sculptor, you know, they get out. It's like we're the bottom level in a funny way, you know.
Yeah.
And yet we're not really, you know, but we are.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think that's because we're all just in a dream somewhere. So we just want to do the song. We don't really, you know, we're like vulnerable adults in some ways. Do you know what I mean? We're just busy writing a song, and we don't want to know about the other stuff.
Yes. It seems music tends to, this is something I read of all things in a marketing study, that one of those things you get a PDF and you read about it, but it says that music, it hits directly at our emotions, right? Which is true. It's a very emotional thing. And it seems like that feeling of the musician having to stop doing it after a certain age, maybe there's a feeling that we shouldn't be having emotions after a certain age, maybe. You shouldn't just be out there feeling it on the stage, and it's an absurd idea in a way.
Well, I think it's a different world now. I feel like that about journalists to a degree. You think, God, you've been reviewing records for 40 years. Surely you could move on from that and write a book or something. Do you know what I mean? Like, but so I feel like that about a lot of stuff. But I remember when I was young and I remember when I was younger. I remember my father reading the newspaper, and he said, the Rolling Stones are doing a tour. They're all 30. What are they doing? Why are they doing that? You know, grow up. And I think at that time, it was very much like that. You can't be in a group when you're 30, you know. But now Bob Dylan, you know, Paul McCartney's headlining Glastonbury at, I don't know, 800 years old or whatever he is, you know, and you know, in his 80s, I suppose. And, you know, and it feels like, you know, I saw Leonard Cohen towards the end of his life. It was fantastic. You know, I really feel that it's a different world now. And when Dylan and the Beatles changed pop music from a throwaway thing into a more artistic form of song, that whole thing that you're talking about went with that, really. I don't think I'd ever stop.
Yes.
Being me.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't think, I mean, there are people who, you know, are in a band when they're 18, they have massive number one records, they achieve what they want to achieve, and by the time they're 23, they're done. I've never been one of those people. There's other people who you just know when you meet them, they're going to be doing that forever, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know which I'd rather be, but I don't have the choice. You know, I wouldn't mind just being the guy who did it, bang, and he's gone, you know what I mean?
Well, maybe goes to what you said. Maybe they did. Maybe they did achieve what they said to achieve. And what keeps you going is what you said before. You just feel that you haven't captured it yet, and that keeps you moving to the next one.
Well, I think the world's changed, hasn't it, massively? And there's such great music around now.
Yes.
And you know, and there probably was then. So it doesn't affect the being great music. But I'd say, if anything, it's a bit less vocational. So when I was first wanting to be in a band, there was no route to being in a band. There was no college you could go to. There was no, you know, you just had to make it up as you went along. And I'm a product of that chaos, really.
Yeah.
Now you can go and study. And, you know, a lot of the people who work with us have gone to college and gone to Paul McCartney's school, Lipa in Liverpool, and they're amazing and they know how to do it. Where I don't know how to do it, but I just get there somehow. They know how to do it, and I'm in some ways I'm in awe of them, but that's just not the world I came from, you know. So I'll always fumble about really and rely on serendipity and kind of happy accidents and stuff like that. And you know, and in going back to what you said, because it's vocational, I'm never going to stop, you know. Whereas I think if it's more career and you've gone to college and you've achieved, you know, achieved your career, then, you know, it's more likely to have an end point.
Yeah, yeah. Would you consider something I found striking in one of the lyrics of the record is in the track "These Foolish Dreams," where you have when you say, "I don't have to pray, I have to believe every day," and that is something that it kept me thinking, and that is the one of the parts I had the record on repeat for the past few days, and that phrase kept, you know, coming back to me. And would you consider yourself in a way, a religious person, or would you consider yourself someone more pragmatic, more in your approach to everything you do?
I would say I'm a religious person who doesn't believe in religions.
Yeah.
You know, I'm definitely not pragmatic, and I'm definitely emotional and led by that. But I don't really, you know, I don't really aspire to religion that way. I mean, that song, you know, is what I said earlier about How Much Grace. It is saying, you know, to a degree, am I just becoming a worse version of myself every year? I'm saying hope, you know, lives in young men's hearts, you know.
Yeah.
Key to their charm, puts the strength in their arms, you know. But I just still believe, you know, I just...
You got to carry it every day.
I just, every day is a new day. And I just, you know, I don't have to, I just believe. And I think that's the same answer that I've just given you. It's like, I'm someone, I just believe, you know.
Yeah. No, it's when I was reading one of your quotes where you said you feel every morning you wake up with a sense that something's going to go horribly wrong. And then the day goes by and it's fine, you know. I think I can identify myself in that sentiment.
I'm sorry that you can.
just got to live with it. Maybe there's something there that why I identify with your music over the years so much. When it comes more now, talking a bit more about the process of making the record in a more technical or more down to the how to do it. What's been your evolution in terms of the production of it? I know that you have your own studio, and that gives you the luxury to experiment, to try things, to have things hardwired in the way that, you know, things are done in a very personal way.
So I think when I made Pure, I pretty much did it at home. And the second album, with Sense and Life O'Reilly, I did in my brother's front room. So I've always been do-it-yourself before, but it was harder because there weren't computers really. And samplers had just been invented. But so they've always been homemade, my albums. And then after the Sense album, I had no record contract. and I set up a studio in Liverpool and I was producing bands, and I made most of Jollification, just even though I didn't have a record contract. And I wasn't really looking for one, but I was just making my songs. So again, it was like a clubhouse for me more than a studio. It was just a place for me to be comfortable. And so I kind of come from that, really. I've come from that. And now I think most people get to, you know, studios, your classic studio that from the 70s or 80s, they had to be places where a heavy metal band could walk in, or a folk artist, or a classical session, and they had to be able to accommodate all those things. Yes. So inherently there's a kind of a blandness to a studio. It's a blank canvas, but it's a place that you can make your own. And the difference now, because people have their own places, whether it's, you know, all sorts of people, Jack, whoever it might be, you know, they have it personalized in that to set up for them. For me personally, I spent a lot of time this album on my own, on the top of my house in the middle of the night. And I never want to do that again. I used to like having people around, really. And when it was tape machines, you know, you can never go back to that. It's like a box that you can't shut. So I will always use the computer, and I'll always, yeah. But I think I don't want it to be as solitary. And yet when I started and I did Pure, it was completely solitary. It was on my own. And then it felt like I got to a point where it was less solitary during Jollification, and other people were around, and I enjoyed it a lot more. And now I seem to have reversed it. So I think if I do another album, which I think I would like to, now that I've kind of, I feel like this album is in some ways a pathway back, and I feel it, I'm at 70% and I could be better. But then I felt like that since I was 20, what, 10. So, you know, it doesn't really mean much. But and in the end, they just are what they are. And I'm very proud of moments of this album. I think it's probably my favorite album that I've done. Maybe not, but it's certainly up there. Maybe there's songs that are, you know, Pure that I might not ever equal. I don't know, you know, the songs that I treasure more that I've made. But as an album, I think this is it's quite coherent, really. Do you know what I mean? It's quite coherent, and a lot of what I'm writing about is personal to me, and I've expressed what I want to express, I think, you know. So in that way, it's successful.
Yeah.
It still feels like I haven't quite nailed it, you know, as to what I would like to do.
Yeah. Wow. That's a really good way to put it. Because it did feel very refreshing as a listener, as a fan. I was like, wow, this was such a big gift to have when it landed on my inbox.
You know what? The nicest thing that one of my friends asked me, he said, you know, could you send me the album? I'd really love to hear it. And he's someone I respect, and he's a writer, but he doesn't write to do with music. And I said, yeah, no, I'll send it to you. And I'm usually not too bothered about what people say about it. You know, I'm more judging their reactions and all that. But he said the nicest thing anyone's ever said to me. And he sent me a note back and he said, I'd like to think that you sound on this album like if Buddy Holly had experienced the Beatles, he might have sounded like this. And it was the nicest thing anyone's ever said to me. I was like, I wish someone had said that in print.
That's a very good compliment.
So that crystallized my ambition. I thought the next album has to be that.
Yeah. Wow. With that, do you have any plans on touring, coming to Los Angeles?
Do you know, I'd absolutely love to come to Los Angeles. And we're talking with the kind people at BMG and with our agent, our American agent. We've never really played in the States. You know, originally when the first couple of albums were out, I didn't really play live. I hadn't really got to that stage yet. And then afterwards, I don't think Sony really put the albums out in America very really, but so it's been, as usual, a strange career, backwardsy stuff. But I'm hoping that there will be some way that we can get out and play some shows, because, I'd love to do that. I'd love to do that. And we're really good now live, I think. I wasn't that great for a while.
Yeah.
But I think right now I love my band. I love the people in the band. There's a lovely feeling in it. And it would be really nice to come and do that.
Yeah. Well, we gotta do something about that. We gotta bring you here.
I have to get someone to book us.
Yes. Well, thank you so much, Ian. It's
really nice to talk to you. And thank you for the support over the years, then. And thank you for enjoying. You know, it's very nice to meet you.
No, thank you. Well, same here. I'm truly touched. I get the goosebumps. I was very nervous because I am, you know, really, your work has really touched me profoundly over the years. It's a true honor to have you here talking to me.
Hopefully meet you in person in LA at some point. You know, hopefully I will get out there soon. So.
Fantastic. Well, thank you.
All right. Take care.
Have a good day. Dublin.